Hutchinson crouches under center, takes the snap, pressure, it's hit! Breaks away, but he's hit again! Aiken Adell had him all bottled up. Somebody jumped over the pile and made sure to put him on the ground. Mike Peterson got him. Hutchinson under center, finding the noise, watches through the safety street puck. His play action, under pressure, hit, sack, safety! Darryl Smith, the rookie from Georgia Tech.
Now, from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, 1010XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, and Ryan O'Halloran.
Hey, glad you're along, everybody. Welcome in on this Thursday morning. Jaguars Today down live at Everbank in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios. We went a little old school with the open there, Tony. Darryl Smith's rookie campaign. And maybe the first time we've seen or heard from Aiken Adell and not heard from T.J. Slaughter in close proximity. Were you here when Aiken Adell was in town?
No.
Aiken and T.J. were running buddies back in the day. They had a good time. We had those guys on another network, as we like to say, quite a bit. Ryan, we do want to talk San Diego a lot today, obviously, with the Jags. Let's focus with our eyes on the future, but this is the first chance we've had to sit down with you, and I know you were on with Frank yesterday, and you certainly written your opinion about this game, but you weren't on board with the game plan 100%, and just tell us why.
On defense here, a couple things I said this off-air is all week leading into the Packer game was the theme was you have to pressure Rodgers, you have to get a four-man pass rush. Well, then they come out, and, hey, to an untrained eye, it would look like a four-man pass rush. They couldn't do squat. So I thought after the game, when Gus was asked about it, I think the proper move for him should have been, well, here's what we were thinking. The contained part, blah, 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 blah. Well, that changes our tone a little bit in terms of, okay, it looked like a couple of these plays, there wasn't a rush attempted. So that's not an effort problem. That's a scheme.
It's not necessarily a scheme problem. It's a choice
It's a scheme decision.
Right.
They're following what they're told to do. The reason I disagree with that is that is so conservative. And you're on the one hand, you're talking out of your mouth saying, we feel very good about our coverage. We've rebuilt the back end. We feel we can cover anybody. Well, to me, that plays into being able to send some more guys because you feel good about your man-to-man coverage. So I thought they should have been more aggressive than they were. And because it's one thing to have respect for a player, that game plan told me they feared Aaron Rodgers.
I think they do fear Aaron Rodgers, though. Well, I think you, is it not? Is
have
it,
fun next year coaching somewhere else.
Okay, but I mean, should you not? I mean, fear respect is a. I think there's a fine line between them. It's an acknowledgement that Aaron Rodgers is a dangerous player, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, whatever adjective you want to use to describe, how they feel, or would that be a verb? Whatever the case, you get what I'm saying. Yeah, I mean, however you want to describe it.
I mean, the MO of this head coach defensively has been ultra conservatism because they don't want to get blown out throughout the last couple of years.
But
they have to change that this Sunday.
Devil's advocate, though, in this particular game against arguably the best opponent they'll play this year, we don't know, but one of the better ones, right? They put them in position to win the game. They had the ball in their hands with 3 minutes to go, able to dictate whether or not they won the game, mm-hmm. right? I mean, so from that standpoint, if you're looking to maybe feel like, you know what, we got a lot of new pieces. We're coming in here. The Green Bay may be the better team on paper because they have played together. They've got, there's not much turnover year to year there. They did put themselves in position to win the game. I'm just playing devil's advocate with you.
I'll add one more point on that is you have two guys with Fowler and Ngakoue who are wild horses at this point. They only know one speed. I would have felt like, hey, it's their first game. If you're telling them to downshift, maybe they do it too much. Fowler definitely did on a couple of plays where it didn't like he wanted to rush so bad. Okay, that's not my responsibility. And he sort of shut it down inadvertently, okay. I think. So I would have acknowledged, hey, you're facing a Hall of Fame quarterback, but also I have two really young pass rushers who are chomping on the proverbial bit. Just let them go early, and then if they break contain – maybe shift mid-game.
Tony, I guess I'm not completely extremely opposite Ryan. I understand the points he's making here, but I think I'm more on the side of I can understand why you'd have a conservative approach because you and I talked a lot about going into it about not letting Aaron Rodgers beat you on the extended play, right? Breaking containment, getting outside the pocket. So what do you think about Ryan's critique about the game plan?
I actually like the game plan coming out of the game. I will say, trying to correlate it for me, the idea of it being too conservative a game plan and them going for it on fourth and five. You know, in the second quarter, I don't know. I can't get that in my head as conservative. I thought offensively, I thought they were aggressive at times and maybe too aggressive. I know there were moments when you would watch them pin that team down inside the five and force three and outs. And I was thinking, why not do that again? And instead they went for it. They wound up getting a field goal out of that drive. I don't know that I thought it was a conservative game plan.
Well, on defense, I thought so.
Yeah, on offense, I thought
it was aggressive.
And I understand being conservative defensively against Aaron Rodgers, I guess, is the point. And if you want to see it as fearing Aaron Rodgers, that's fine. I see it as respecting his ability to make a big play, and he didn't, right? I mean, outside of, you know, Jalen Ramsey's hanging off him on a blitz that worked, and he makes a superhuman throw, they really didn't beat the Jaguars downfield in that game.
I would stop blitzing Ramsey pronto. I think he's better utilized as covering somebody because he's like a lot of rookies. He doesn't know the right route to take right now. I would have, especially against Rivers, I blitz up the middle because this is a guy who has no mobility compared to Rodgers, and see if you can get him a little happy feet, because if you blitz him around the edge, he'll just step up.
No mobility, which really makes it so galling that he basically beat him on a third and long run last year, which went to show you just how bad the pursuit was getting after the quarterback last year. You heard anything about Chris Ivory at this point other than what's been made public?
I don't expect him to play.
Okay.
I think they will rule him out tomorrow, so he won't make the trip.
So you don't think he'll practice today then, obviously?
I don't think so. I think their approach right now is be ready for Baltimore because of the hospital stay. You know, what is his pain tolerance? Has he been able to eat or probably not exercise? So what's his conditioning? I think the bigger injury concern for this team right now is Prince Mukamara with the hamstring. He didn't practice yesterday. I don't think he's going to go today. If he can't go, then I think that changes your plan because then you have Dwayne Gross as your third corner. Then I think you do have to play some coverage with some extra guys dropping back.
Yeah, it'll be interesting because, you know, if you look at it and said, hey, Prince had an outstanding week one, but if you said, hey, could we take Prince out of our lineup if they take Keenan Allen out of their lineup, would that be a fair trade? I think before, you know, the season, you would have said that's probably a fair trade. So, hey, injuries are a part of it. We'll keep track of whether or not Prince is able to return to practice and get on that plane as well. But as of right now, at least Ryan O'Halloran's feeling is that Chris Ivory won't make the trip. We'll find out if that becomes official over the next day or so. All right, today we'll talk about how the Jags should and will attack the San Diego Chargers offensively and defensively. If you'd like to get in, 641-1010, the phone number. It's also the text line driven by Duval Ford. Today's question of the day, brought to you by the Tom Bush Family Dealerships, is this. It's pretty simple. How many games, now you've seen the Jags play 1 week, how many games do you expect them to win out of their next three? In other words, what's the record going into the bye? And if you think it's less than 3-1, if it's 3-1, you obviously expect them to win all three games. If it's less than that, which specific games are you pointing to as Jaguar victories over the next 3 weeks? So share your thoughts with us on that on social media, at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and at Ryan O'Halloran on Twitter. And, of course, the Jaguars Today Facebook page is open for business. We'll come back, take your calls. We'll hear from some of the folks like Blake Bortles, who spoke yesterday midweek in preparation for the San Diego Chargers. It's Jaguars Today right here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
I think it's cool to kind of see how much, you know, as a team we've grown, obviously individually, but I think as a team how much we've grown really in the over 3 years that we're now going to be playing them. I think it's cool. I think it's cool to kind of sit there and go through schematically, you know, how we're going to attack them, what ways are we going to try and be different this year, you know, what are we going to take from last year that, you know, we felt worked well and stuff like that.
That's Blake Bortles talking about looking back a couple of years ago, his first start in the National Football League after playing a half of football against the Indianapolis Colts the week prior, came against San Diego, and a loss on the road, which has been a common refrain when the Jags have gone out on the West Coast. Ryan, you, I guess, ask Gus Bradley, followed up, what did he remember from Blake's first start? Did you catch him by surprise a little bit? What do you think?
It's never a good start when the answer starts with It's a good question.
That's it. We all recognize that as a stalling tactic, which gives us time to gather our thoughts. So let's hear. Here's exactly what Gus had to say in response to your question.
Boy, that's a good question. I haven't thought too much about that. you know, I remember just getting him in there. Sometimes when you just have an opportunity to go in there and play, you know, you look for their poise and stuff. And if I remember, I thought his poise was pretty good. You know, that was one thing that stood out at us.
All right. He did not.
He went to the poise hot button.
I think I went with poise. I'm pretty sure that was what it was.
What I was looking for there is, hey, do you remember yourself being nervous? Hey, this was the franchise quarterback. You went to him at least a month before you thought you would. Did you think he was ready? Did you really have a choice?
I think it was a poorly phrased question, Tony, myself.
That was a terrible question.
Had to be. Don't you, when you go out, a lot of people are saying you got to let it rip against the Chargers this week. To me, I look at what Kansas City did with Spencer Ware, both as a runner and a receiver out of the backfield. I think this needs to be a big T.J. Yeldon game.
I think it needs to be a big Yeldon game. I think it needs to be a big tight end game. Because right now, those
Julius killed him last year.
Yeah, so those linebackers didn't look great in coverage against Kansas City last week. Spencer Ware, a running back, had 3 catches of over 20 yards.
Yeah.
That's incredible for a running back. So yeah. I think, you know, you don't want to say you're going to – this is not a nickel and dime offense usually, but if they can run some screens, run some swing passes to Yeldon, then they can act as runs. Maybe that'll loosen up the defense a little bit. I think they're going to be able to score a lot against San Diego.
When you look at the running game, let me just ask you this. T.J. Yeldon, how do you think T.J. himself played? I know what the stats say, but how do you think he played on Sunday?
That's a tough one for a running back because you don't really like know what hole he's supposed to like. Was he overpatient?
Not patient enough. Not patient enough. Did he make the wrong read?
Yeah.
Sure.
To me, like when I watched it was when he didn't have any room, he really didn't have any room, and he busted out some 6 and 7 yard runs where he got some yards after contact. So those rushers were good. I would agree with Gus's comment throughout the week saying that he ran hard. He did. In terms of the blocking up front, a couple things I saw was they lost some one-on-one matchups. Also, it looked like they were just outnumbered. And so should they have gotten out of some plays? Should they have ignored some of those plays when Green Bay started defending them the way they did?
Yeah, they were selling out on the run blitz. And I guess when you got the way the game's being called on the outside, you know, when apparently Allen Robinson is now – public enemy number one can be targeted with impunity, right?
Yeah.
And if you're going to get away with that on the outside, it makes run blitzing all the more easy to do.
Yeah, because, I mean, they had six negative rushes. On three of those, it was an unblocked guy. So, okay, was somebody supposed to get out there or were they outflanked?
Right.
So you have to come to some conclusions, but – I mean, the positive for that O-line is they pass protected relatively well, better than I thought they would.
Yeah, I thought they did a decent enough job, but at the end of the day, something's responsible for that. We talked with Jeff Logman the other day, and he was saying, you know, it's not just the line. So in some of those responsibilities, your wide receivers and tight ends.
They didn't do a good job.
We're not getting the job done. Right.
Yeah, Julius had one. You know, one run they had, Allen Hurns against Clay Matthews, that's a scheme issue.
Right.
So I would just remove that play from the book. So, but Jeff is right. Is you did see some receivers and tight ends not blocking either.
I just had my gut impression was TJ played well, and because a couple of those you said he got hit, you know, unblocked guys. He was having to make guys miss 5 yards deep in the backfield sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not always going to be able to do that. And I thought he got what was there, and on occasion he even got a little bit more. And some of the negative runs, I thought one of in particular, I can't remember exactly what point it was. I remember him making a guy miss 3-4 yards deep in the backfield and get it back to about a yard of the line of scrimmage.
I think it was Matthews.
Yeah, I thought that was one of the better runs he had all day, and it went for a negative run. So 6-4-1-10-10 if you'd like to get in. Let's go to Ron in Gainesville to start things off this morning here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Ron.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good.
Thanks.
That's great. I just like to chime in on the question of the day and give my opinion on the game. I think that the game plan was pretty good. When you look at an offense like the Green Bay Packers and to hold them under 300 yards, to hold Aaron Rodgers under 200 yards, mostly getting helped out on a lot of on those scoring drives by penalties that weren't called on the other end. I honestly think that if that game was called fairly, the Jaguars could have won by 7 or 10 points, honestly. Secondly, the next three opponents that we have, Philip Rivers, Joe Flacco, and Andrew Luck, the Colts don't seem to be able to stop anybody on defense. And that should be a game that we should win in London and really solidify that home field advantage over there across the street, the ocean. And just Philip Rivers and Joe Flacco are not exactly what they used to be. I still respect them as quarterbacks, but I really think that these are three games that not only by our talent level and what we can bring to the table as far as what we have on our team, we should win, but it'll be kind of disappointing if we don't go at least 2-2 or 3-1.
All right, Ron, I appreciate the call. Yeah, I mean, to me, every game they lose in the next three is going to be a disappointment, but that's just the way I look at it, and maybe not everybody sees it the same way. Tony, do you think? How do you look at this Jags team going against San Diego? In your mind, forget what the odds say or any of that, do you think they're the better team? Do you think they should be the favorite in this game? In your mind.
I do. And look, I came in on Monday and I told you, and I'm not coming off it yet, I think the Jags are going to win this game by 2 touchdowns against San Diego. I think it's a reeling San Diego team. They had an opportunity to get themselves into the 2016 season last week with that first half lead they built against Kansas City on the road, an opportunity to really get themselves going. Instead, they blow that game in the second half. They lose Keenan Allen. Joey Bosa still hasn't been able to even get on the practice field for this football team. They're playing maybe the last home opener in San Diego ever. That cloud's hanging over their head out there, too. I think it's an organization that's in a little bit of chaos right now, and a Jaguars team that's going across the country playing with some anger that I don't think we've seen from them. Coming off a game like that against Green Bay, I think they're going to beat San Diego pretty soundly.
Well, we're going to find out in the first quarter where this team's head is at. I go back to last year when they gave away the game at Indianapolis in overtime, missed 2 field goals. The next week at Tampa, they no-showed in the first half.
Yep.
I think they're down 21-3. They eventually got close to him and took a lead for a little bit, but they lost 38-31 to a Tampa team, which I felt the Jags were better than. So we'll find, you know, if they could come out against San Diego and get a lead in the first quarter, it imposed their will because they have more players. Maybe San Diego will say, we don't have Keenan Allen. How are we going to come back?
Yeah.
So
you don't know how they're going to mentally respond to that loss. I mean, that loss can be devastating or it can be, man, we really let one get away. Because I think the Jags are feeling the same way, right? We really let one get away. San Diego's coming home and it's kind of a circle the wagons kind of thing. I think I'd feel much better had they won against Kansas City,
yeah,
right? Just that psychological, that little bit of desperation that you play with when you get the season off to an 0-1 start. Let's get back to the phones. Nick is in Arlington. He's next up on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Nick.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, two questions for you. First one is, there's so much viewing of after the game. You look at the tape and you see what you did wrong. Is there any accountability for these refs? I mean, I know every time we come up here we say, man, the refs, that was a horrible call. Do they go back and they see what they missed? Do they go back? Do they have a guy that comes and, hey, you missed that call, or, hey, that was a terrible call, you're getting in trouble, or what's the deal with that? And then the other question is, I hate to jump ahead, but what if we do lose next week? I mean, or this Sunday, what are we – is that a game changer? What are we going to – what are we thinking then? I'll just want your
thoughts. Well, I mean, a game changer in what regard?
I guess
they're not not firing the coach if that's the kind of game changer you're thinking about.
I mean, like, do we go back and look at our gameplay? What are we looking at? Like, are we? I guess what I'm saying is, we get so close, but yet so far at the end there. You're like, man, we're right there. What if it's one of those nail biters again? And we just regarding the fans, me, I'm always going to be a fan, but it just seems like, man, if they do that again, it would be just such a heartbreaking, you know, nail biter, and then all of a sudden they lose in the last second. Just like, man, I hope it's not the same thing, same old thing. And I know it's
Understood.
A hard fighting team, but I just wanted to say, just your thoughts on that. I know it's a kind of a silly question, but you know.
All right, Nick, thank you.
Two things. If they lose in their 0-2, the feeling in the building would be, okay, that makes the next two even more important. That's the way these guys are programmed. First thing you asked about was the officials. They are given extensive grading and tape reviews from the league office every week. in terms of holding them accountable. I don't think you guys – I don't think they get fired midseason because I don't think they have 30 guys waiting in the bullpen.
Right.
They could call up from the Big Ten or whatever.
They lose postseason games.
And, you know, they say that it's random during the season, but you see Ed Hockley doing more primetime games than other guys.
Have you heard of any of the Jags sending any tape to the league this week?
They did. Trying to think how I should comment on this because there was a leak in the building from a somebody spoke to the employees of the building, and the GM revealed some information about that. They sent multiple calls to the league, and they were responded with, yes, we screwed up some of those calls.
On a good number of those calls, because yes. I think I've seen the same information that you have.
And
including some crucial game situations.
And that Jaguar employee is pathetic. Because the GM is trusting you with some of this insight, and you're going to squawk it to somebody else on Twitter.
Right. And that's,
because that can result in a fine.
Right. That's what somebody tweeted to me. Right. The GM talking about what the league says can – but haven't we seen coaches and stuff say, hey, the league admitted they made a mistake on that play before?
I was told of this information on Monday and Tuesday.
Uh-huh.
And what the thing is, you can't report this so the organization doesn't get fined. Because if I were written it, the NFL would say, well, he had to get it from the team.
Right. And look, the info is out there. It wouldn't be that hard to find for yourself. And if the numbers being reported are accurate, it's honestly a staggering amount of screw-ups by an officiating crew, honestly, in my opinion. Let's go to Steve at the beaches next up here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Steve.
Hey, good morning. Couple things. So we definitely have to win on Sunday. If we don't, then you know, we can call this season a wash as far as I'm concerned. But the offense,
this guy makes me sound positive.
oh yeah, the offensive line has got to, I mean, when is that going to be solidified? I mean, every other team's offensive line seems not to be a question. For us, it's every year the question. And then third of all, Marquise Lee, do you think he's messing up the mix of things? I mean, I thought we were potentially, could he mess up the mix of things on the rotation as far as our consistency on offense? What you guys have
Well, the season isn't over if they lose. It's obviously not a great start. The offensive line, I think it's going to look different week one next year. So it's going to be, you know, like a lot of teams, the Jaguars are in this position where it's going to be a constant churn from year to year. They feel good about the five guys. They feel it's a solid five guys. It's the five guys they plan to have.
And like you said, it wasn't like Green Bay was constantly, you know, knocking on Blake Bortles' front door there.
Yeah, I mean, one of the sacks was because Denard Robinson got trucked.
Exactly.
And T.J. Yeldon would not have gotten trucked on that
Which
play.
Is the one that Tony and I have talked about for the last 3 days being the biggest exhibit of where they miss Chris Ivory. Because if Chris Ivory's in there, that means on that play, probably T.J. Yeldon is in there protecting Blake Bortles because he doesn't need a rest at that
point.
Yeah,
and from then on, it was T.J. Yeldon playing every snap.
Right.
With the exception of from first and second down work.
If they don't, if Ivory, and I know you want to get to the last point, but if they don't have Ivory this week, are they going to try to make a roster move and bring back maybe a guy like Banyard or Gray if he's healthy?
Jonas Gray is not eligible to play for this team because he was waived injured.
So he can't come back to the team, period.
He can't come back to the Jaguars. Remember a couple years ago, Chris Pruszynski was IR'd by the Jags and then waived. You're eligible to sign with another team and play immediately, but not the team that IR'd you. Okay. The running back thing, I asked Corey Grant yesterday, hey, are they throwing some stuff in there for you for just to get you outside? He said, not yet. Maybe they feel just committed to Yeldon right now to get through another week. Last thing is Lee. I agree with the caller a little bit. They'll always say, well, Blake's taken what's given to you. His first pass on first third down was intended for Marquise Lee, and it looked like that's what he was looking for. In terms of the mix of the playing time, Marquise is not impacting that. Hearns and Robinson are still going to be far and away your top two guys in terms of snaps. Allen Robinson had 15 targets, which led the league last week. 9 of those were in the fourth quarter. Maybe draw some stuff up for him early in the game.
Right. I don't have an issue with the way they use Marquise Lee right now anyway, because you watch a Monday night game, right? And Eli Rogers, the new slot receiver for Pittsburgh,
sure,
he's getting involved. And when you watch that happen, you say, oh, look at Ben. He sees the field. He's getting everybody involved. You know what I mean? So it's a delicate balance.
Whereas here, it's like, why isn't he going to the star?
Right. And it's not like they're not giving the ball to Antonio Brown in Pittsburgh, but every time they throw to Eli Rogers, they're not saying, oh, my gosh, every ball has to go to Brown. Maybe it should have on Monday night the way he was playing.
And I think with the offensive line thing, just real quick, I think a lot of times we get caught up in whatever's happening right in front of you. And you don't realize what's happening across the league. Because I think with very few exceptions, the conversation about offensive lines is going on every week in this league because offensive line play, quite frankly, sucks.
You know, honestly, it may be going on in Dallas a little bit.
Right.
Like, how could we not run the ball more effectively?
I'm not saying the Jags have figured it out. They obviously have some issues that they need to figure out on the offensive line, but that's not a Jaguars problem. That's an NFL problem.
Right. I do agree with you on that as a whole, and I did think the pass protection was pretty solid for the most part this week. All right, Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, and Fat Tony here with you. If you'd like to get on board, 641-1010 is the way to do it on the phone lines and the text line, driven by Duval. For today's social media question of the day, how many games do the Jags win before the Week 5 bye? In other words, which of the next three do they pull down W's in? And give us the specific ones. If it's not, if the answer isn't all three or none of them, give us which ones you think they actually will win. Hit us up that way as well. It's Jaguars Today, live at Everbank on 1010 XL and 92.5 FM. Unbelievable. Ryan O'Halloran, first thing, and he walked into this room this morning, started talking about fantasy football to me. FanDuel is back, and even O'Halloran is on board. He didn't have a great week in FanDuel, but you can this week. Even Ryan can. It's a fresh week for everybody. I had a great week last week. Doesn't mean anything is guaranteed in week two, but the guarantee is I can pick any players I like from around the NFL, play the matchups that I want, play the games that I want. They've got beginner contests for new players only. You can settle a score with a friend in a head-to-head matchup, play a 50-50 where the top half of the field wins cash. You can even play in larger tournaments for a shot at big money and a little bit more action on the line as well. Go to FanDuel.com, click the Join Now button, and use my promo code Mike, and FanDuel's going to give you 5 free entries to 50-50 beginner contest, 1 for each of the next 5 weeks. The value of those contests will be determined by the deposit you make. And once you're signed up, go to FanDuel.com/Mike. Play head-to-head with myself, Tony, Ryan, and Tyler, and many more. FanDuel.com. Use promo code Mike to get those 5 free entries.
Jaguars Daily is brought to you by Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the official sports medicine provider for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Sunday's game will mark the first in San Diego for Jaguars quarterback Blake Bortles since he made his first NFL start there in week 4 of the 2014 NFL season. The Jags lost that game 33-14, but Blake says this team, this time around, it's going to be different.
I think it's cool to kind of see how much, you know, as a team we've grown, obviously individually, but I think as a team how much we've grown. Really, in the over 3 years that we're now going to be playing them, I think it's cool. I think it's cool to kind of sit there and go through schematically, you know, how we're going to attack them, what ways are we going to try and be different this year, you know, what are we going to take from last year that, you know, we felt worked well and stuff like that.
On the injury front, Chris Ivory did not practice for the Jaguars yesterday. The running back status for Sunday's game at San Diego, head coach Gus Bradley said, remains to be seen. This has been Jaguars Daily, brought to you by JOI. I'm Jordan DeArmond.
I'm Dan Scuda of your Jacksonville Jaguars, and you're listening to Jaguars Today on 1010 XL and 92.5 FM.
Not a lot of action for Dan Scuda in week one for the Jacksonville Jaguars, which led to, obviously, because a lot of nickel was played, Ryan, led to a lot of questions, though, this week for Tony and I. Where was Miles Jack? Why is there no plan to use Miles Jack? Why was it incorporated? I thought Telvin Smith played very well. I didn't think it was a case of, man, Puzlowski and Smith are letting him down. But the question that keeps coming up, if Jonathan Cyprian's a liability in coverage, is there a way, in even just in certain situations, you can go out there and say, hey, Miles, go, as Tony said yesterday, there's a tight end, stop him from catching it on this play. What do you think? How are we going to see Miles Jack start to get integrated into this defense?
Well, I don't think you're oversimplifying it. I asked Todd Walsh that yesterday. Did you have a couple of things that you just didn't get to? Was there a dime snap or whatever where Jack would have been out there as a third linebacker? He said that there were some things that the situation just didn't call for it. As far as this week, I mean, I'm still of the mind you just find a way to get him on the field without taking Smith and Puzlesny off, because those two guys have – earned the right to stay out there after their first week play.
Telvin was outstanding, I thought.
Yeah, 2 tackles for lost yardage. So, I mean, the tight end thing, would make a lot of sense. Chargers also use a fullback, which means the Jaguars are probably staying their base defense a lot. Okay, maybe put Miles Jack at strong side linebacker in name only, knowing that, okay, when he's on the field in base defense, his job is to cover the tight end. So I think there's definitely some ways to get him on the field. But the more they don't, granted it's one game, the more they don't, it's the questions are going to come then. Is he struggling to learn? Do the coaches not trust him? Has he not found a position yet? Those are unfair questions that will just be talked about on social media. But I think it's important to get Miles a taste of it, so when they do go to him, it's not zero snaps, 65 snaps.
Yeah, Miles, to me, and now look, just you can draw inferences from meeting a guy in five
Sharp.
Minutes against danger. Seems like an incredibly smart guy, yeah. Right? I don't think he's going to have any problem taking in information and processing it.
And Wash said that too. I said, you know, has he stayed positive during this? And he said he has a phenomenal attitude because Miles is a very bright guy. He knows his time is going to come.
Right.
So just has to be a little patient.
He's biding his time. And here's what Wash had to say when you asked him about it yesterday.
We thought about getting him in at one point in time, and then some things started to happen, but we're still in the process of, you know, figuring exactly where he fits in and all that. And he's done a great job. You know, today he was really focused at the walkthrough and executing. And he knows there's a process to all this, you know, and we go along throughout the whole week to see where he's at and see where we can get him in.
They can get him in. Just matter where they want to put him in.
Right. And who you want to take off the field,
yeah, right,
you know, at that expense.
And look, I know against Green Bay, and as complicated as some of the things that offense can do, and you're talking about putting a rookie out there, and the linebackers were actually playing pretty well, there were a lot of factors where, coming out of that game, I'm not really all that upset that Miles Jack didn't play. He's too talented a player, too gifted an athlete for a team that has had problems covering the areas of the field that he should be able to help them at. That's why you draft him in the second round, for him to not be on the field sooner rather than later and have some idea of how you're going to use this guy to make your defense better. It's struggled.
Yeah, piggyback on that point, Tony, is these coaches' game plan for this game, since the schedule came out, Miles Jack wasn't here at all during that OTA or minicamp schedule. So Gus sort of kind of talked around that, saying, hey, there was a lot of stuff in this game. I think there was a lot of stuff that was game plan in the spring and summer when the schedule came out. So now that they're back to square one, I would be surprised if they don't find a way to get him on the field for a half dozen snaps minimum.
It'll be one of the interesting things to watch for coming up this weekend. Let's get back to the phone line, 641-1010. Darren is in Nocatee, and he's now on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Darren.
Hey, good morning, guys. Love the show. It's just awesome to get to hear y'all every day while I'm riding around town. And
we appreciate it. Thank you.
And, you know, here's the deal. The NFL season, games, series, comes down to literally a handful of plays in most games. I mean, we have that kind of parity. Before Jacksonville, we were way behind. We have the talent now. We can man up with anybody. So the facts now are, where are we going to tweak this? Where are we going to tweak that to be on the winning side now? And because that Green Bay game, I believe if Chris Ivey had been healthy and in the game, I'm convinced that we win that game. That's just me personally. I'm convinced that's how close I think we were to winning that game. So, number one, I'm picking Jaguars this week by 10, okay? And I know that's a healthy number on the road, but I think we're that good. I think the coaching staff is in one mind and one accord. I think they've got this thing planned, figured out. And, you know, and it's really just going to come down to just a handful of plays. So if we did lose by a field goal or a missed field goal, we'll be talking about all the things that went wrong. But I can tell you this. If we win by 1 point or a field goal, or even if we'd have beat Green Bay by that last play and we won the game, we'd have been talking about how good the pass rush, you know, contained him, how good Rodgers only got 199 yards. So that's how close this game is. And you know what? We're right there. And I believe we're ready for a 9-10-1 season. So I'll hang up, listen, guys.
All right. Thank you, Darren. I do agree that if they win the game, all of a sudden you're saying, wow, you know what? The defense put them in position where they could come back and win that game. And there is a bit of a perception difference there, but the problem is you got to make those plays that separate the teams that always come up short and the teams that win their fair share or more than their fair share of these contests. So it's great that you're in it, and I do find that just the feedback that we've gotten in the last few days, more people were encouraged by the performance than discouraged by the result. But at some point, maybe Sunday,
you got to get
the result.
You
got
to start getting the result. And I think if you look back to the San Diego game here last year, and you want to talk about a handful of plays that make a difference in an NFL game, the Jags' first two drives ended with field goals. The first one ended on a field goal that they had to attempt from inside the 5-yard line. They got bogged down inside the 5, so they had to kick a field goal there. The second drive is when they tried to pass to Tyson Alualu on a 3rd-and-1, and it wound up incomplete, and they kicked a 50-yard field goal. They should have been in more than control of that game against San Diego last year, but instead, they don't make a couple of plays there early on. Late in that half, Blake throws that inexplicable pick to Manti Te'o, and it winds up with San Diego going into the locker room with a 21-9 halftime lead in a half where, especially in the first quarter, the Jaguars dominated that football team but couldn't take advantage of it. It really is about a handful of plays early on in that game. Maybe they get a San Diego team down that is in that hole. Hopefully this week they make those couple of plays early on.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I just had a call on the line. If you had a final point on that, go ahead.
Take the call.
Paul wants to comment about something you – or ask a question about something you just said. Paul and Hilliard up next on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Paul.
Hey, good morning.
What's up?
I just want to tell you I love your show. I listen to it every time I can if I'm not at work.
But, we appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you. What was said about the game planning and whatnot because Miles Jack wasn't there and for training camp and for – various reasons. Well, I'm not calling for the coach's head, but doesn't he need to adjust the game plan if that's the best guy there?
That's fair. I understand what he's saying.
But do we know he's the best guy?
At this moment, maybe not. I think potentially when you look at what he's considered coming in, and that's a good – that's a fair point as well. Mm-hmm. You're right, Paul. I think if you just take it in its simplest form, and I'm not, then that's fair that you could interpret it that way, that they made a game plan. Shouldn't that game plan be adjusted when new circumstances present themselves? But I think what you're saying is, Ryan, there was so much detail that went into this. You've been working on this one game for so many months, and the fact that Miles Jack came in, it was not just that he came in, though. He was here, and then he was gone for a long period because of the Pac-12 rules that don't allow you to be around. And, he was trying to learn the middle linebacker spot and learn all the calls, so his focus was on that. You didn't try to overload him. So I get what Paul is saying. On the surface, if you say, hey, a coach didn't adjust because of new conditions, but I think I understand the point you're making with all the different circumstances that go into it.
If they felt that Miles Jack gave them a better chance to win than the other linebackers, he would have been on the field Sunday.
Right. Bottom line. But I understand from Paul's point. If you say, they had this game plan in before they had Miles Jack. Well, wait a minute. Why didn't they adjust when they got Miles Jack? Maybe they felt like the adjustment, the best course of action was to go with what they had. I'm sure they considered, hey, we've got this new guy in here now. Paul, thank you for the call. Folks, I want to remind you, David Garrard will be in with us tomorrow. One of the things we love to talk about when Dave's in here is retro fitness and how well he's been doing with those franchises here in Jacksonville. In fact, if you join Retro Fitness in September for only $10, you'll pay nothing more until December 1st. You can experience about what being a member of a gym should really feel like. Friendly staff, state-of-the-art equipment, they've got it all. Goal planning, high-energy group classes, expert personal trainers, outdoor group training. Even David Garrard is involved in some of those classes. Retro Fitness is changing lives here on the First Coast. Visit them at 9802 Bay Meadows Road or 13475 Atlantic Boulevard. And if you can't remember those, the easiest way is go to RetroJax. That's RetroJax.com. Learn more about David Garrard's Retro Fitness locations here in town as he'll be in studio with us tomorrow. He doesn't know this, but a former teammate is going to join us for part of the program tomorrow as well. We'll have Double D in here.
Nice.
Along with David Garrard. And I may come up with some kind of steel cage to put these guys in, Tony. They're two of the most physically fit post-NFL players I've ever seen. We may have them wrestle it out to see who's the king of the hill.
You can't have a newcomer come in and steal the show.
I don't know if Donovan Darius qualifies as a newcomer. However, he's a longtime friend of the program. Coming back this date in football in the Honda Drive around the NFL. Don't forget to check out RetroJax.com. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, and Fat Tony here with you on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history presented by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. We'll go back to September 15, 2002. Oakland quarterback Rich Gannon began a record-tying streak of consecutive 300-yard passing games. He tied the record previously held by Kurt Warner and Steve Young. How many consecutive 300-yard passing games is the mark that Rich Gannon tied? What do you got?
11.
11, Tony?
I was going to say 8.
6. That's surprising to me. It's only 6 in today's modern era of pass-happy football. He threw for 403 yards in the Raiders' 30-17 victory that day at Pittsburgh. He finished the year with a record 10 300-yard games. Famous birthdays for this day. You better bring the lumber if you were born on this day. Yes, what do you got?
Well, go through your birthdays first.
All right, birthdays. He passed away at the age of 69, but he was born in the state in 1940. Merlin Olsen, one of the favorite TV dads, but a 14-time Pro Bowler, five-time first-team All-Pro, Hall of Fame inductee in 1992. Of course, he played Father Murphy. And Dan Marino, born in the state in 1961, Hall of Fame quarterback, inducted in 2005. He was a 1984 NFL MVP, a nine-time Pro Bowler, and a three-time first-team All-Pro. That's not even good for second-most Pro Bowls born in this state, though. Will Shields was born in this state, the longtime NFL offensive lineman with the Kansas City Chiefs. 12-time Pro Bowler for Will Shields, including two first-team All-Pro appearances, Hall of Fame inductee in 2015. I'll throw Ernest Biner in there as well. Happy birthday, Ernest. Even though people most remember him with Cleveland and the fumble and all that stuff, did go on to win a Super Bowl with the Washington Redskins and was a two-time Pro Bowler in Washington. He is 54 years old today.
I got one other birthday. Born in 1949, listening to the show. My father.
Pops O'Halloran.
So happy birthday to my dad, who is listening in Fargo this morning.
Hey, good morning to Pops O'Halloran in Fargo, North Dakota. You betcha. Presented by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive around the NFL. Brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Well, the intensity of the Giants-Redskins game in Week 3 could be off the charts. Yesterday in the locker room, Giants players were taking shots at Washington corner Josh Norman for not covering Pittsburgh's Antonio Brown throughout the entire game on Monday Night Football. Instead, Norman stayed on the left side of the field in the defense. Brown caught a couple of touchdowns on the opposite side. Last year, Norman and Odell Beckham Jr. got into it the week leading up to the game. That resulted in a pretty ugly game, with Beckham taking some pot shots at Norman during the contest last year. Victor Cruz said yesterday, quote, especially if he calls himself, and I don't call him this, he calls himself the best corner in the league, then you have to go cover the best receiver on the other team, Cruz said on Wednesday. Going in, I thought he was going to follow AB all over the place, but he didn't, so it is what it is. He made his choice. Giants cornerback Janoris Jenkins said, quote, I think when you're paying someone $70 million, there shouldn't be no game plan. The game plan should be you're on this guy, and that's what it is. Adam Schefter reported this morning that, according to a source, Buffalo wide receiver Sammy Watkins, who is listed as questionable with a foot injury for tonight's game, wants to and is expected to play. Buffalo plays the New York Jets tonight. Both teams coming into tonight's game at 0-1, already looking up at the Garoppolo-led New England Patriots in the AFC East. And San Diego Chargers defensive end Joey Bosa was held out of practice again yesterday with a hamstring injury, putting his status for the Chargers home opener this weekend against your Jacksonville Jaguars in doubt. Bosa has still not participated in a padded practice with the San Diego Chargers.
How about that? All right, there you have it. The state football and the Honda driver on the NFL.
The Giants, Josh Norman stuff is hilarious. They don't even play this week.
No, but you know what's hilarious to me? Like, with Victor Cruz saying,
he hasn't played either.
But in the back of my mind, I'm thinking Victor Cruz is thinking, yeah, please go follow Odell. Yeah, right? Because, like, I heard Jeff Prosser and Dan Hicken talk about it this morning. Jeff, I believe, said something to the effect of, why are you trying to help them out with their game plan? Hey, Victor Cruz trying to help himself out here. He's going to get Josh Norman all day long.
Go fight each other.
Yeah, why don't you? Yeah, isn't that the matchup everybody wants to see? I asked Maurice Jones-Drew about it on our show last night, and said, is this who decides this? Is this the defensive coordinator? Because Norman's comments after the game indicated, he said, look, I'm trying to be very careful here. I'm not trying to criticize the game plan, but you know, he seemed like he wanted to take on the challenge of following AB. And when Antonio Brown was on his side, he played him very well. Maurice said, look, there were times when we were here in Jacksonville and Rasheem was at the top of his game, and if a guy was killing us in the first half and they were playing halves, you know, left half, right half, he said, forget it. I'm going. He just told the coaching staff, he's mine in the second half. You got a problem with that. And they didn't generally have a problem with that because Rasheem could handle it. And, you know, I guess you can make that argument that Josh Norman should have done that. But
coaching stubbornness gets in the way sometimes.
Maybe so.
But
and he's always played that way. I guess he's more comfortable on that side of the field as an Antonio Brown supporter for fantasy football.
Same here.
Quite happy that they made that decision. Yeah, so Howard comes in today and he's like, he goes, didn't do well on FanDuel. He finished pretty low in the league, but he's back for week two. But the last garbage time or no, pretty late catch for Antonio Brown sealed the victory for you, huh? In your head-to-head?
Play Yahoo. And I beat my buddy Norm Wood, 133-132. So I hadn't really even been paying attention to it until Norm texted me like in the third quarter saying, hey, we've got a great game going on here. So I started following it. As soon as Brown caught that catch, I got a text from Norm. It had an F and it had a K and a lot of U's in between.
Ah, yes. All right. We understand that. Love to see it. Love to see you catch the fever. Let's get a couple calls in before we break. Michael Gelkin of the Union Tribune in San Diego will join us coming up on the other side to preview the Chargers this weekend. Let's start with Jeff on the west side up next. Hello, Jeff. How are you?
Just great. You got a good show. I think the Jaguars will win the next four games if they don't turn it over. And if the refs call a good name, I think good game. I think they won't have any problems. And I'll listen off there. Thank you.
I don't know if they won't have any problems, but I agree that a four-game streak, when you include Chicago coming out of the bye, I think these are all games that each one individually I will expect the Jaguars to win. Now, when you sit here and say, will they win all four? Can they win all four? They certainly can. Will they? Probably not, but each one going into it, Ryan, barring some kind of major injury wave, I'm going to feel like they have the better team.
Yeah, and he made a good point. You can't control the officiating, but you can control turnovers. And you're minus one. That led to a touchdown by Green Bay. If you can limit your giveaways and start producing more turnovers, then you should like your chances.
All right, one more. We've got Justin in Atlanta with a question for Ryan O'Halloran. Go ahead, Justin.
Hey, guys. Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it.
Ryan, Jeff, I was listening, I think it was either yesterday or the day before. Somebody asked Jeff about how Malik Jackson did this past Sunday, and I thought he was overly generous just by saying Malik was okay. Because, I mean, when I watched him and I focused in on him on quite a few plays, it just seemed to me like he was totally gassed. Like he had nothing going. I mean, he got a couple pressures, but for the most part, either it was just a lack of effort or he was totally gassed. And I also wanted to see if you thought Tyson Alualu would be active for this game in San Diego. Thanks, guys.
Sure. Jackson, I mean, two plays stood out. He made a play in the run game, and then he beat Lane Taylor to flush Rodgers out of the pocket. I think he threw it away on that play. But there wasn't a lot of other stuff from Malik. And you don't know what the role of the interior guys on the pass rush was either. So I expect a little bit more out of Malik Jackson going forward. As far as Alualu, if this is a fullback team, so if that means more heavy players, I think Alualu could. I think there's a place for him on this active roster.
At whose expense?
I mean, I guess maybe Avery Jones is your backup nose tackle, but maybe one less corner. Because if you have, you had all corners active on Sunday.
Right, but could be tough though. If Prince, yeah. I mean, Prince might make that decision for you, right? If he's not healthy.
Gotcha. So. You know, you're running into a numbers game there right now, but I was surprised Alualu was active as opposed to another guy.
Or not active.
Or, excuse me, yes.
Yeah, I knew what you were saying. All right, thank you for the call there, Justin. We'll try to get more of your calls a little bit later on in the hour. Coming up next, Michael Gelkin from the Union Tribune in San Diego on the Chargers beat, and we'll preview what the Jags have in store for them when they head out to the West Coast tomorrow and play the San Diego Chargers on Sunday. With Fat Tony and Ryan O'Halloran, I'm Mike Dempsey. It's Jaguars Today, live at Everbank on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now more Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
I'm sure in Jacksonville they're just like we are here. They didn't lose it in the same fashion, but they're sick because they lost. So we got two 0-1 teams that are they're going to be a little bit aggravated and salty and something to give on Sunday. I think the thing I have to do as a, from my standpoint is just let it rip and go, hey, this is a ball I'd thrown to 13. I'm throwing it to you, 16. You know, I'm throwing it to you, 12. You know, and just trust it and go. And that's the only way you're going to build it and start making those plays.
That is Philip Rivers, of course, the quarterback of the San Diego Chargers at his midweek press conference, which I assume Michael Gelkin was in attendance at. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, Ryan O'Halloran of the Florida Times-Union here with you on Jaguars Today as we welcome in Michael Gelkin of the Union Tribune in San Diego. Good morning, Michael. How are you, buddy?
Good morning. I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
We're okay. What do you think? We hear what Philip Rivers had to say there. What is the general frame of mind? Is this going to be a kind of a rallying cry week for San Diego? You lose a heartbreaker in the division on the road. You lose Keenan Allen. Is it circle the wagons time, or is this team feeling a little bit shell-shocked with that double hit of the loss and the loss of their top wide receiver?
Oh, they're pissed off. That's probably the most apt way I can characterize the Chargers locker room right now. I remember, and it's not very difficult to remember, it was just on Sunday, but following the loss, and the Chargers were up 21-3 at halftime, 24-3 in the third quarter, and in the fourth it was 27-10, and still found a way to lose 33-27 in overtime. Just got away from them. And guys are sitting in the locker room, guys like Corey Legit, defensive end, actually from Florida, and he's just sitting there in silence. He's dressed now. He's no longer in uniform. And he's just staring 1,000 miles into the ground and says, I'm so pissed off, and we've got to take it out in Jacksonville. So those are the leaders on this team, and they're going to find a way to channel their, you know, frustration, I suppose, with how the season started. And you don't want to make too much of this because ultimately – guys are going to be up for every game that they play. You know, no one's going into week two complacent anywhere in the NFL. But, yeah, the Chargers aren't coming into this game like a wounded dog. They're focused. They had a good practice on Wednesday, and they'll look to continue that today.
How are they planning on replacing Keenan Allen? I know it's the second year in a row they're going to have to replace his production, their wide receiver. Where are they turning to this time?
Well, it's funny because it's not easy to do. I mean, I was sitting next to an advanced scout for the Jaguars on Sunday at Arrowhead Stadium, and we were talking a little bit before the game. And you know, and his job as an advanced scout for your guys' team over there is to, you know, just look at the substitutions and this and that. Not so much what's going on the field, but if you're him, anybody in attendance at Arrowhead can just tell you what an opposing matchup Keenan Allen is. He's a nightmare to defend. Coming off the line, he's just so good with what he can do. And now the Jaguars won't have to worry about that, but they will have to worry about a collective effort. The Chargers still feel can while maybe not being quote unquote Keenan Allen, and you know they don't have a guy like that. He's elite, and you have to respect his loss for what it is. But Tyrell Williams, a second year wide receiver out of Western Oregon, who needs to learn to play to his size a little more. I just wrote this today for today's paper. He's 6'4". And doesn't really tack the ball in the air, at least with the consistency the Chargers want from him. So he's still developing. Travis Benjamin, speedy wide receiver, who, while he can get behind the defense, the Chargers like his ability to take a quick hitter and see what he can do after the catch. You have Dontrell Inman, a pretty precise route runner, a tight end, Antonio Gates, Hunter Henry, a rookie. I can go down the list. Danny Woodhead and a running game with improved balance. There's so many different ways the Chargers will look to mitigate the absence, the void of Keenan Allen. It's not just going to be one guy. It can't be. He meant too much to this offense.
Michael, you mentioned the running game just now with Woodhead and Melvin Gordon. How much of a surprise was their effectiveness coming right out of the gate last week?
Well, I wouldn't say it was a total surprise based on how things looked like in training camp. It was something we were watching, whether or not the improved play that we thought we were seeing from the offensive line could be sustained over the course of four-quarter games, something we hadn't seen. And they came out firing with not just Danny Woodhead, who we've seen have success with the Chargers, but Melvin Gordon, a guy who was more confident, looking to show the world what he could do. He had a nightmare of a rookie season, rushed for less than 700 yards, didn't score a touchdown at all, dealt with ball security issues, injuries. His season ended on injury reserve with a knee that required microfracture surgery in early January. So just a nightmare year for Melvin Gordon. The Chargers weren't surprised that their run game got going the way it did, but it was certainly warmly welcomed after averaging 3.5 yards per carry last year, dead last in the NFL, and even being worse in 2014 with 3.4 yards per carry. Chargers were well over that on Sunday.
Michael Gelkin here with the San Diego Union-Tribune. Of course, part of the reason they had a poor yards per carry, they had so many injuries that they were plagued with on the offensive line last year. Michael, as you well know, that was a unit that was under siege, it seemed like. What's the state of the O-line for San Diego right now?
Yeah, it was 24 unique combinations the Chargers used last season. And this year, knock on wood, and there's probably not enough wood around you to knock to to buck the trend of offensive line injuries for the Chargers of recent years, but they're healthy right now. Matt Slosson, the center who they signed in May after the Bears released him, was exactly what they needed, just stabilizing force from left tackle to right tackle. He's that presence, that toughness, that veteran that they needed. And then you look at the rest of the guys, Keen Dunlap and left guard, Orlando Franklin, Dunlap being the left tackle. Those guys were just so banged up last year. And then right guard DJ Fluker was dealing with ankle injuries throughout last season. He's coming off of one right now. And then right tackle Joe Barksdale. That five is one of the Chargers felt comfortable with going into the season. They've had a lot of reps together, building the chemistry in camp, but they wanted to see how they would play together. And so far, so good. It's just one game, one out of 16. So it's really too early to judge it, but it was definitely the positive start the Chargers were looking for out of that unit.
Last week, defensively, Travis Kelce, the running backs coming out of the backfield, really gave the Chargers some problems. How much is there a focus on trying to slow down specifically a guy like Julius Thomas who can kind of run that middle of the field for the Jaguars offense?
Absolutely. They're a bit of a similar target between him and Kelce. I mean, a little bit different players, the way they go up and get the ball. But, it's certainly a point of emphasis for the Chargers. They had no defense for Travis Kelce. Even when it was a situation that became clear, Alex Smith likely was going to go to him, they still couldn't stop him. And I think at some point it becomes a credit to Travis Kelce, and you would challenge other players to do what he did to the Chargers. It really is a testament to the player that Kelce is. There's not a lot of guys like him around the league. But Julius Thomas is someone the Chargers are familiar with from his time in Denver, and he's had some success against them. I think the biggest success that Julius Thomas has had against the Chargers has come when they've had communication breakdowns. I mean, Manti Te'o not following him off into the flat, whatever it may be. They just need to be a little bit more focused for four quarters. Chargers defense looked pretty darn good for three of them, but that fourth quarter and overtime, they had nothing left. And so I think it's about keeping that focus for four games, keeping the tackling up. That wavered over the course of the game. It's come down probably to basics more than anything else. But, yes, the Chargers certainly had a reminder going into this game on Sunday what a tight end can do to them, what someone like Julius Thomas, how he can affect the game, and just the same T.J. Yeldon and running backs, what they can do in open space if they allow them to.
Hey, Michael, Dwight Lowry, the Jaguars are one of his many former teams. He's now free safety of San Diego, replacing the Charger legend, Eric Weddle. What are the early reviews on Lowry and how he's stabilizing the back end?
Yeah, he's a smart player. You're right. He's been on a lot of teams. This is his fourth in as many seasons. So he's been a bit of a vagabond around the NFL. But, I don't think it's for a lack of respect that he gets from coaches. He's been through a bunch of different coaching staffs, kind of bad timing why he's bounced around so much. But you look at what he's done so far, and the Chargers had that veteran void in their secondary, at least at safety. And, he stepped in and shown he's a kind of a guy who's not going to get too high or get too low. He has a good perspective on things, having been in the NFL, I believe this is ninth season. And, when it comes down to watching film, he's one of those guys who really prides himself on it. And for a secondary that has so many young guys, and Weddle was just this film guru, who young safety like Adrian Phillips would just love to pick his brain and sit in his hip pocket and be next to in meetings. Well, Lowry's that kind of guy too. Not quite the same effect. Weddle's pretty special when it comes to that, but Lowry's just helping fill that absence with the Chargers feel without Eric Weddle. And, it's something when you lose a guy like Weddle, who's just the voice of your defense and does so many things. And when you don't have that guy to defer to, it forces everybody else to communicate a little bit more. So the Chargers secondary with Dwight Lowry just feels different, for better or worse, because Weddle was a stud in a lot of ways. But you're seeing the defense communicate a little bit differently, and there can be a positive effect to that.
Hey, Michael, I'm reading some guy named Gelkin who wrote that Joey Bosa is unlikely to debut this weekend against the Jaguars.
Don't read anything that guy writes.
Yeah. He's very questionable. What is the timetable, the expectation for when we're going to see Joey on the field?
It won't be this week, I would say, with good confidence. He missed a padded practice on Wednesday, and that was his last chance to have a padded practice for the Jaguars game. And that's important because Joey Bosa hasn't had a single padded practice since he joined the team, given his holdout. So you're not going to see his first time in pads come in the game situation. So he won't play this Sunday against Jacksonville, but maybe next week. Still probably too optimistic. We might be talking week four, week five. I think that's probably when you start to look at maybe, a likely time when Joey Bosa can step on a field bar and he has no further physical setback. It's a shame. I think it was predictable, however, that a player who missed as much time as he did, all of training camp, the entire preseason, that when you have that sort of layoff, you are a little bit more susceptible to the type of things that, well, Joey's dealing with, the hamstring strain. And it's unfortunate, and man, is he pissed off about it. That's the third time I've used that phrase. Joey, first talking about the Chargers and how they felt coming off that loss, but Joey Bosa is completely agitated and upset and just frustrated that he is not with his team. When he was doing his contract dispute, he had confidence that when he did report, he would set the world on fire. He would help his teammates. He would be on the field week one. He would be that guy. Instead, he suffers a hamstring strain and was standing on the sideline as the Chargers defense collapses. Well, really, the whole team collapses in the second half in overtime, and it killed him. So he's going to have to wait a little bit longer, and you just see that frustration in his eyes build. But before long, his time will come.
Before we let you go, how do you think the game plays out on Sunday?
Well, the Jaguars have had a tough time against the Chargers in the past. However, anyone who follows the league, I mean, it's pretty clear that the Jaguars have been drafting very high, and they have a developing quarterback who's making strides, and he has weapons. And there's not a team that anybody should sleep on. Their ability to go on the road and get what I guess would be an upset, although quite frankly, it feels weird to describe the Chargers, who are 4-12 last year and just lost another game this past Sunday, being a favorite. But I think the Chargers should be able to run the football with some success. I think some of it will carry over, even though Malik Jackson in that front could cause certainly some disruption along the way. But I think the Chargers, without Keenan Allen, will find a way to move the ball enough. And I think this defense will show why it did so well against the Chiefs for the brunt of the game. I think there's Jason Verrett versus Allen Robinson is going to be a lot of fun to watch. I think the Chargers will find a way to win this game, but the Jaguars are certainly not the cakewalk that they used to be.
Yeah, that is going to be the matchup, I think. Verrett, for people out here on the East Coast, I don't know how many people realize just how good he is. Greg Olsen said that he played Allen Robinson as well as any cornerback in the league last year, and they expect him to shadow him all day on Sunday. Should be a great battle. I remember watching that matchup with Alshon Jeffrey last year, Michael. It was like night and day. Jeffrey could get nothing going, and Verrett, I don't know if it was a hammy, he hurt himself, some soft tissue injury, came out of the game, and all of a sudden Jeffrey went crazy, and it was pretty evident the job that he was doing on him, so we'll watch for that one. Hey, we always appreciate the time, bro. Enjoy the game this weekend, okay?
My pleasure, guys. Take care.
All right, you got it. Michael Gelkin, you can find him on Twitter at SDUTGelkin for San Diego Union Tribune, and we appreciate him stopping by. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Ryan O'Howard, we'll take a look at the fan feedback spotlight today. Just asking you, how bullish are you on the Jags picking up victories before the bye week? How many wins, and who are they going to get them against over this next three-week stretch? We'll also want to ask Ryan about Michael's comment there about the Chargers having some success moving the ball on the ground against this Jaguar defense. We'll do that when we return in a moment. It's Jaguars Today, live at Everbank on 1010 XL and 92.5 FM.
Now more Jaguars Today on 1010 XL, 92.5 FM.
There you go. Nothing puts a smile on his face like a little JT. Wait a minute. Is that Tony getting up and dancing to this
I'm
right
not
now?
Dancing.
Oh, but you could if you wanted to, right?
I don't remember.
Show us the routine. Just for like five seconds. There are no cameras rolling in here
know,
right now.
But I really don't remember the routine.
Come on.
I've done it,
but I've never heard you lie so blatantly in your life.
I don't remember it.
Your mom is ashamed of you right now. You realize that? Hi, Mrs. Smith. She's a lovely lady. And you're such an honest young man until this very moment. Tony performed this at some kind of camp, didn't you?
Yeah, it was a church camp, and it was to impress the girls, and it worked.
There you go. See?
I learned the dance for NSYNC's Bye Bye Bye, and honestly, it worked as well as it did because everyone knew how much I hated boy bands.
Is that right?
Like, because I would just berate people that listened to boy bands. I was a big, you know, metalhead.
And it was that shocking. We couldn't expect Tony to be performing this.
I was a big metalhead, punk rock kid, and all of a sudden I'm up there with three other friends doing the Bye 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 dance.
Nice. I bet he remembers most of it, Ryan. He won't admit to it. Heck, I emceed the sixth grade talent show. I remember every act in it. Every single act, I think. Well, maybe not everyone, but most of them. I was in sixth grade. I'm a lot older than you, Tony. Come on. That today coincides. We're asking about how many wins before the bye, plus O'Halloran loves him some JT. But before we get to that, Ryan, Michael Gelkin made a comment. He thinks the Chargers will have success running the ball against his Jags defense. I think that's one of the strengths, potentially. Jonathan Cyprian's missed tackle on Eddie Lacy notwithstanding. What do you think about that?
I'd be surprised if the Chargers have success. Packers went for 3.8 yards a carry, but that included a 28-yard run by Lacy.
On what shouldn't have been, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think San Diego's best chance is just to, you know, throw it a little bit.
And I think throwing it to Woodhead can be effective. I think that's what they got to watch out for. Yeah. I think that's an extension of the running game, but just lining it up and handing it to Melvin Gordon.
It's a tackling game. It's a big-time tackling game for this Jaguars team, which we've seen them struggle with at times over the course of the last 2 years. You mentioned the game going down to Tampa last year. That's really where they got beat in that game, is they just couldn't make a tackle when they had the opportunity to. And against a San Diego team that I expect to be dumping the ball off to guys like Gordon and Woodhead, kind of those underneath routes a lot in this game without anybody to really take the top off this defense with Keenan Allen not there, I think it's about the linebackers and the safeties coming up and making those plays, you know, within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage. And if they do that, I think they make it really difficult for San Diego to move the ball.
All right, O'Halloran, you got official prediction on this game?
Well, I'm running into a little problem here. We have an ad in Sunday's paper with the picks.
Okay.
That was due on Monday. So you'll see San Diego being the pick.
Okay.
So I'm going to stick with that in the paper. So I'll pick San Diego, 31-27. But I would be very surprised if the Jaguars don't win.
All right. So that was his gun to the head Monday selection.
Yeah.
Right? Coming off. Ryan was still a little depressed.
Make you pick on Monday?
That seems...
Well, they have to get the ad ready.
Man.
Get your act together, TU. Come on, TU. All right. Tony, let's get to the fan feedback spotlight right here. In fact, we got one on the line. I think, do we still have Mike Tyler in Springfield? In Springfield, Illinois, he's checking in from, talking Jaguars with us this morning. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, gentlemen. Next 3 weeks, first of all, I got news from Mr. Gelkin. They are not going to run all over these Jaguars. This is not the Jaguars from years past that you use as your bounce-back team from a tough loss. Jaguars are pissed off, too, after their loss for a change. I think it's going to be a close game. Jaguars win. Baltimore, Jaguars win by a little bit bigger, I think. And then I think Indianapolis, Jaguars are going to blow them up.
Give them the beating.
Yeah, that's a horrible defense. I think it's going to be something close to what we've seen last year. I don't know if we're going to put a half a hundred on them again, but that 35-40 point range, I think, is what we're going to get on them. My only problem with that game, and I'm sure somebody else has brought it up at some point or another, but the fact that it's a division game being played in London, I do not like. I love the whole London thing. It's been good for the Jaguars. It's been good for the city. But I just don't like the fact that it's a divisional game that's there this year.
Understood. Probably in the same boat as a lot of people on that score. Michael, thank you for the call. Thanks for listening in Springfield, Illinois this morning, and whenever you happen to catch Jaguars today.
Sure. Look, honestly, for fans out there, if it came down to losing the Indianapolis game or Green Bay, I mean...
Rather lose Green Bay.
Not me.
I would.
Not me.
I would. The division game's so much more important.
No, I get the importance of it. I just, as a fan, I'd rather go watch Green Bay. Just bottom line, I'd rather go watch Green Bay play football.
I'm sorry, Tony. You're talking about losing the game to London.
Yeah.
I thought you meant losing the game.
On the schedule, it makes all the sense in the world. Green Bay doesn't affect you all that much if you win your division games. But if the game you're losing to London, please don't take Green Bay from me.
Right. I do get that. But, you know, that those are the only two games at the NFL's disposal to choose to play.
Oh, I get it, yeah.
I got confused on what you're talking about there for a second. All right, fan feedback spotlight today. Tony, how bullish are these people on the Jaguars' chances in the next 3 weeks?
They're pretty bullish. From Mike, we got 2 with the Chargers and Colts as wins. From Matt, we got 3-1. That's a common theme here. Johnny, 3-1. From Will, he's -0 of the next 3. From Jeff, he has them at just 1-2 over the next 3, so 1-3 going into the bye with the 1 win coming against Baltimore here next week. From Brian, all 3. From Irish Jaguar, 2 with the Chargers and Colts. Union Jack's Joe, 3-1. From New Jags fan, he says, I want to give them more wins, but they have to show they can before I buy in. 1 win against Indianapolis and London. 2 from Jason. Daniel, win 1, will beat the Colts. From Buddy, we got Jags go 3-1. From Ian, 3-1. From Demetrius, 3-1. From Jag fan, 3-1. So 3 was the most common answer.
I'm getting a lot, like you're saying, they should go 3-1. As Adrian says, they should go 3-1. But I think they will go 2-2 because this team's still coming together and in their current form, and things don't always go as they should. You win against the Colts and a heartbreaking loss against either the Chargers or the Ravens. Garrett followed up with a PS to his 3-1 by saying Jacksonville's a more talented team than all three, but they have to get out of their own way. We sat here and said we think they should do this, Ryan. What do you think they will do? Do you think it's likely if you – you know, what's the likeliest record for the Jags going into the bye week?
I think 2-2. You know, this team hasn't shown they can win multiple games early in the season, and how can they handle that prosperity? So winning 3 in a row, you know, if they come back from London with a 2-2 record, they're in very good position.
They should be. It doesn't look like anyone. Houston's a good team, I think, this year. But I don't think they're going to run away and hide in the division. But let's go out and get this one against San Diego. So critical. The pressure will be enormous against Baltimore if you lose this football game this weekend. Hey, pressure should always be there in the National Football League anyway. You're getting paid to play. O'Hallen, what do you have coming up in the next few days in the TU?
In tomorrow's paper, we have something with Ngakoue and Fowler. What'd they get out of that Green Bay game? How can it help them moving forward? Something on Marquise Lee for Saturday. Bigger part of the offense than we probably anticipated in the first game. And then Sunday, talking about the offensive line a little bit. Did they ever think this wasn't going to come together? Did they think they'd still be patching it together by week 2? So we'll get their take on that.
All right, we'll look for all that coming up in the next 3 days. He's Ryan O'Halloran. Thanks, buddy. We'll see you next week.
All right, next Thursday.
All right, on Twitter, at Ryan O'Halloran. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, signing off here along with Tyler Devitt and Joe Fortunato. Thanks again to Michael Gelkin of the Union Tribune in San Diego for joining us today. All of you out there in Radio Land, always joining all our sponsors as well, including the law offices of Farrah and Farrah, our Thursday sponsor here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Stick around and fret not, because the boys of the Midday Chalk are coming up on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Hey, folks, Mike Dempsey here for Dandy Sandwiches and Subs. Oh, my goodness. You just looked up and you realize it's almost lunchtime. Is that your stomach you hear grumbling? Well, it won't be if you swing into your Circle K or Kangaroo Express, the first one you come to, and you head right to the Fresh Case and look for that Dandy product line. Dandy and the Anytime Deli line have been getting it done right here on the First Coast, a locally based company. The Thompson family, big supporters of the sports scene here and big supporters of delivering food to you that you're going to feel like you got your money's worth with when you purchase it, and you're going to keep going back for more. I've been a Dandy customer for over 2 decades myself, long before I ever started talking about them on the radio. I started talking about them on the radio because I really believe in their product. I'm a big tuna salad fan, but Dandy's got variety for every appetite out there. Breakfast sliders, new light lunchtime wraps, and the classic sandwiches and subs you've come to love over oh so many years. So whether it's lunchtime, tailgating, or anytime you're hungry for food on the go, do what I do and go out and make yours a dandy today.
You guys have a good day. Peace.